You're listening to Explore by the Cycling Podcast, brought to you by iWaka. Flexible loans built for small businesses. iwoca.co.uk.
Welcome to Explore, the long-awaited return of our show about bikepacking, adventure riding, and the simple pleasure of seeing the world on two wheels. I'm Lionel Burney, and I'm delighted to be joined again by Hannah Troop. Hello, Hannah.
Hello, Lionel.
You've survived the pro racing season then, with almost a year's worth of action crammed into 3 months. There was very little break between the Tour de France and the Giro, and no break at all between the Giro and the Vuelta, because they overlapped, of course.
Yeah, it has been kind of crazy, hasn't it? I think from the beginning of August through to kind of almost the beginning of October, I was probably at home for about 4 days that whole period. So that was quite an insane time away of travelling around and being in a bubble.
Yeah, it's been a bit of a stop-start year for all of us, hasn't it? And it's not been all that easy to go exploring. Most of the world has been subject to some form of lockdown or other, or at least restrictions on movement, and travel has been a bit trickier than we're used to. And we've all been tethered a bit closer to home for much of the year. And speaking from the UK here in mid-November, we're back in a form of lockdown. And as I look back over the year so far, it's pretty noticeable that I've done a lot of my riding on the indoor trainer. I've probably ridden more than in the past 3 years, but a lot of it without actually going anywhere. Although I did take my bike to the Tour de France for the first time in a few years and enjoyed a number of rides with Richard Moore, my co-host on the Cycling Podcast. On the first rest day, we rode over the bridge to Ile de Ré and were quicker than some of the pros, Strava told us later on, which was nice to find out. On the other rest day, we did a lap of Aix-les-Bains, which was a glorious ride round the lake, lovely rolling hills and wooded countryside. And we also saw Andy Schleck going the other way, and he was moving pretty well, I have to say. Anyway, this episode is hopefully a really feel-good one, celebrating the simple joy of just going cycling.
You're listening to Explore by the Cycling Podcast, brought to you by iWaka. Flexible loans built for small businesses. If you run a business, find out more at iwoca.co.uk, iwoca.co.uk.
Thank you to iWaka, our title sponsors, who came on board in the spring and have supported us through our Giro, the Tour de France and the Grandest Tour. And they also enabled us to bring back Explore, although 2020 hasn't quite panned out the way we all hoped. But we do have plans for 2021, bringing you more stories about people exploring the world on two wheels. Now, iWaka are in the business of making it easier for small and medium-sized companies to borrow the money they need to cope with seasonality or grow their business to the next stage. And it's been a very busy year for iWaka, of course, as companies have had to cope with the coronavirus pandemic. iWaka is also a company that has really embraced cycling, encouraging commuting by bike and also riding for leisure and fitness. If you heard our recent Grandest Tour series, you'll know that they recently organised a London to Brighton ride to raise money for the Stephen Lawrence Charitable Trust. If you run a small business and want to find out more about how they might be able to help you, go to iwoca.co.uk. That's iwoca.co.uk. So in this episode, we're going to hear four short audio diaries documenting some of the rides that have taken place over the past few months. And Hannah, I remember during the depths of the first lockdown, you had one ride in mind that was really motivating you and helping to keep you positive. What was it?
Yeah, so actually, I didn't think it was going to happen at certain points this year. Once we then started back into the season, and I wasn't really sure whether I was going to be going to the Giro or not, or whether I was actually going to have a bit of a window to be able to get out and do it. And so during lockdown, we like you said, we had that conversation about what would be the ride that we would want to go out and do once we were out of lockdown and had a bit more freedom again. And I don't know why, but for some reason, Mont Ventoux was kind of really calling to me. And then I read the recent Emily Chappell book, and which we also did an interview for earlier on in the year. And she talked a lot about Mont Ventoux and how it really held quite a heavy memory not a heavy in a bad sense, but quite, it was just quite, it was very, it stuck with her for quite a reasonable amount of time. And that kind of fueled my urge to want to go and explore and try and do some kind of bikepacking trip. And because I'd never done bikepacking before, and I kind of thought I needed to kind of, as I'm doing a podcast about it quite often, it was probably about time to go and do some myself. So I decided during lockdown, because everyone was obviously in their houses, especially here in Barcelona, we couldn't really get out. On our balconies, one of my neighbours and I, we'd sometimes bump into each other in the hallway. We actually started to talk a bit more, and then once we were actually allowed to go back out again and start and ride our bikes, we kind of bumped into him, and he was like, "Oh, you cycle?" And then we both kind of realised that we both cycled and stuff. And then we said, "Oh, we should definitely start and go out and get on the bikes and go out riding together." And so we kind of started doing that, what, like on a weekly basis, going out and cycling together. And Ollie's quite new to cycling. He only really started in the last 6 to 8 months, maybe a bit more actually, maybe around Christmas last year. And so he'd never really done any large summits or mountain summits. And anyway, I kind of started talking to him about this idea that I wanted to go to Montpellier, to probably get the train to Montpellier and then, or find a train route and then jump off the train with a bike and then ride to Mont Ventoux and go up Mont Ventoux. And Ollie's the kind of person that's always up for an adventure that I've found. And we've done some really long rides and some pretty insane rides once we were allowed out further. And so he said, "I'm up for it. I'll come with you if you want." And I said, "Yeah, okay, let's do it." And then we was like, "Okay, when are we going to find the window?" And we managed to find this window in sort of like the second week of October. And yeah, and we just kind of went for it. And we learned a few lessons along the way, which I've been told that you learn them very quickly when you start and go bikepacking for the first time.
I listened to all of your dispatches as they came in, and once our producer Will Jones had put the episode together, I had another listen through to the more or less finished episode when I was on the turbo trainer, and I have to say it put a real spring in my pedal stroke, if I can put it like that, and a smile on my face. I was chuckling along listening to all your stories, and was pretty moved at points too, as you'll find out why when you listen to the episode. But just hearing you all being outside cycling with friends and family, it was just what I needed on a grey November day. Now, I'm not going to spoil things too much before we get started, but I'll just run through the stories we're going to hear. We're going to hear from Richard Moore, co-host of the Cycling Podcast, who did his own version of Ride London in northern France. And it was for a cause that had a real personal connection for him. We'll also hear from Felicity Cloak, the author of One More Croissant for the Road, who cycled the coast-to-coast Way of the Roses, which goes from Morecambe to Bridlington in northern England. Now, it's a Sustrans route, which totals around 170 miles, and it's called the Way of the Roses because it starts in Lancashire, which is the Red Rose County, and finishes in Yorkshire, the White Rose County. And we'll also hear from former Team Sky pro Ian Boswell, who'd wanted to go on a bikepacking trip with his wife Gretchen. And a little bit earlier this year, they managed to find the time for an overnight trip. It was outdoor camping as well. It was in Vermont near their home. It wasn't a particularly long ride, but I think that just shows that you don't have to go that far to have an adventure out on the bike. Before we start, you might be wondering what s'mores are. I certainly was, and it turns out that they are a combination of biscuit, chocolate and marshmallow sandwiched together and toasted over a fire. Now, if you want to know more about each of the rides that you're going to hear about in this episode, we put some of the details in the show notes. So if at any point you're wondering who's talking about which ride, you can refer to the notes. But without further ado, Hannah, let's join you and Ollie and your bikes at Barcelona train station.
Oh, so 10 to 8 in the morning.
We are
in Barcelona, Sant Estació.
Platform 4, I think that's the Leon one, 820.
820, that's the one. We've now got to dismantle our bikes and put them into the ever luxurious bin bag to get onto the train. Yeah. We're off to Montpellier.
Let me dismount them.
Okay, Ollie, whereabouts are we now?
We've just arrived at Montpellier Station, set the bikes up after
what was a relatively hassle-free transit through Barcelona and the southern tip of France.
The beauty of the Schengen.
Yeah.
The beauty of the Schengen. Just on a train into another country, bike set up within 10 minutes and we're good to go. So, just got to try and navigate getting towards Ventoux.
Yep. The mean streets of Montpellier, headed towards Provence.
Yeah.
And we can take it as it comes. I mean, it looks to be relatively quiet. Hopefully no rush hour traffic at midday. Unless the geriatrics have settled. A few mobility scooters to navigate through, but I think we're
going to be good.
Yeah,
we're going to be good. So, we've still got probably about 70, 80k left to do. And we've pulled into an Intermarché, not quite the picturesque coffee stop I had in mind in Avignon.
I think you're underselling this Supermarché. I've got 50% discount on Aperol. So that's mixed nuts, fresh bread, salad avec poulet, and sweeties. Honestly, you're going to love it in there.
But having said that, though, impressively, within the first 20 kilometres, there was so much gravel, roads to ride on. We saw amazing yellow, bright yellow butterflies. I saw a snake. I thought it was dead, but then realised it wasn't. It was actually alive. What else did we see, Ollie? There was something else.
Plenty of horses.
A lot of horses, yeah. But the route was just absolutely...
We've not had too many cars, apart from that last bit in, was it Nîmes?
Yeah, we've just been through Nîmes. And I have to say, Komoot is my new favourite platform, internet platform. It's done wonders. It's given us an absolute blinder of a route.
Yeah.
You just got to kind of nudge it towards the quieter roads, and it's taken us down some absolute stunners through vineyards. We've had sort of rolling hills in the background. Yeah, it's been pretty sweet so far, and we just had to have a very quick stop because I have just looked at the at Google and it says it's still going to take us nearly 3 hours to get to where.
I'd have bonked in 3 hours.
So, I think our ETA at Spencer and Karen's, the incredible listeners that got in touch with us on Twitter after I'd said that my the place I wanted to go and ride to after lockdown was Mont Ventoux. And so they got in touch and said if I did go to Mont Ventoux, then we should go and I should definitely go and stay with them. I got in touch with them and they said they looks like they've got an absolute pad of a cycling accommodation place, like guest house place. So Spencer has kindly said he's going to come and meet us at a town past Avignon that I can't remember the name of, and take us in the last 30 kilometres. That potentially could mean that we're not going to arrive until 9 p.m. tonight. So hopefully...
Dinner in bed. We'll have to do a recce of the perimeter first thing in the morning before breakfast.
And that's it. We're not going to be able to see anything. It's going to be pitch black. But anyway, as long as it's a nice bed to stay, I don't mind. Oh, also, the other thing that was an absolute... So they always say that the first time you do a backpacking trip, you find out what your error of your ways are and you make those mistakes so you never make them again. One mistake I probably won't ever make again is planning a route from A to B, switching it round so I could get the same route to go back, map us back to Montpellier from Mont Ventoux, to then just download both twice the route back from Mont Ventoux to Montpellier. So the whole of the way here, we've been following a route that's constantly telling me to do a U-turn and go back to Montpellier.
If it was easy, it wouldn't be fun.
Oh, you live, you learn.
Yeah.
So next weekend, that's the 15th, 16th of August, the Vuelta a España should have been starting, but also I should have been riding Ride London, 100 miles on closed roads in Surrey, starting and finishing in London, and I was going to do it with my brother, Peter, and my dad, Brian. My other brother, unfortunately, couldn't do it. He lives in Washington, so it was a bit difficult for him. We were going to ride because the main charity, the headline charity, the official charity for Ride London this year was to have been Pancreatic Cancer UK. And I lost my mum to pancreatic cancer 15 years ago in 2005, which is amazing that it's been 15 years, partly because I can remember the time between diagnosis and her dying so vividly. We knew nothing about pancreatic cancer when she received her diagnosis in May. And I remember her coming back from the hospital with my dad and telling us. And one of the things that you do when you hear about something like that, of course, is you look it up. And I looked it up on Google and was horrified by what I saw. I didn't even have to read much. I just saw the kind of bare facts of pancreatic cancer, and they were bleak. And it was thoroughly depressing and upsetting. So upsetting that I didn't, read on and I didn't look again. And the problem was that, unfortunately, pancreatic cancer is a very hard disease to treat. And my mum was told that surgery wasn't an option. So she went on straight on to chemotherapy, hoping for the best. But we knew that the outlook wasn't good and the statistics were very bleak. And the problem was that we had nowhere to turn. There was no kind of organisation to give you any information or support. And that made it what was a very horrible, tough experience even worse. You really felt kind of on your own, especially when doctors, as well-meaning as they were giving you bad news. There was really nothing to help us through that period. And my mum passed away week after her birthday at the end of August that year. And a few years later, I think my dad alerted me to the fact that an organisation had been set up, Pancreatic Cancer UK. It was 2008, I believe. And, we all felt that we wanted to be connected to Pancreatic Cancer UK because we had some understanding, I suppose, of what other people would be going through. So we signed up to support Pancreatic Cancer UK, to be on their mailing list and so on. Weirdly, about 7 or 8 years later, when I moved house, I sent Pancreatic Cancer UK an email telling them that I'd moved address, and I got an email back. And you never think that these organisations are actually staffed by real people. You think it's all kind of machines and computers, but I got an email from a lady called Carrie, who asked if I was the Richard Moore who was on the cycling podcast, because she was a big fan and a big listener. And that began a correspondence, and I was invited into Pancreatic Cancer UK in London, and I met the team, including Diana, the chief executive, and they were all lovely. And it was quite a kind of inspiring place to visit. This, on the one hand, this very bleak disease that kills a lot of people and is tends to be diagnosed very late. And one of the problems that they have as a charity is that they have so few good news stories and so few survivors to help raise awareness and raise funds. So they depend a lot on family members, friends of people who have unfortunately passed away with pancreatic cancer. And so they asked me to be involved as much as I could be, and I was delighted to do so. And as part of that, and given my connection to cycling, I was invited into their pitch to the Ride London organisers, who also organised the London Marathon, to help sort of sell the Pancreatic Cancer UK cause to them. And they won this pitch, which was amazing because they were up against some huge charities. This was going to be a hugely significant event for them, Ride London, this year, in terms of raising money to provide nurses, to provide information for people who, like us 15 years ago, are in need of help and information. Anyway, cut a long story short, the event has obviously been cancelled because of COVID, and that means that there'll be a different charity next year and pancreatic cancer lose out. So I am doing my little bit, and a lot of other people are as well. They're doing their own My Ride London, and I'm doing mine on the 15th or 16th of August, whichever is the better weather. And the idea is to ride 100 miles. Well, it was always going to be quite a serious undertaking, but at least I was going to be doing it in a big group. Now I'm going to be doing it on my own, and I haven't ridden 100 miles in at least 20 years, which obviously means this century and in fact means this millennium. I don't know what the longest distance I have ridden is, probably 80 odd miles, but it's quite a serious challenge for me to take on. But yeah, roll on the 15th or the 16th and let's hope that it's not too windy. So I've just done my final big training ride before my 100 miler next weekend. 103 kilometres today, what's that, about 64 miles. Tried to go further, but it's 35 degrees temperature here, and I set off with two water bottles, thinking that I would stop at a shop and refill, and then realised that I didn't have a face mask with me, and it's a big no-no here in France, as I'm sure it is in lots of other places, to go into a shop without a face mask. So this created a bit of a problem, and I couldn't really improvise with an inner tube or anything, or a sock. So I was keeping my eye out for somebody outside a house who I could maybe ask, but didn't see anybody. So cut my ride a little bit short. I had been intending to go further. I was following the River Somme, and I was hoping to go all the way to Abbeville, which is almost at the bay of the Somme, the mouth of the river up at the Picardy coast, which I've not been up that far yet, but I'm told it's very nice. Anyway, good ride. A thirsty last hour. Felt quite good though, and confident that I will be able to do 160 kilometres next weekend. A bit slower, a bit steadier, and with a bit more fluid, hopefully. I'll remember my mask next week.
Hi, this is Felicity Cloak, Croissant correspondent. I'm just about to embark on the Wear the Roses Coast to Coast ride from Morecambe Bay to Bridlington. We were going to do the Sea to Sea ride, which goes a bit further north, but lockdown restrictions made that feel a bit unwise. So here I am at Lancaster Station. I'm just waiting for my riding partner to arrive in from Birmingham, Gemma, and then we're going to ride from Lancaster to Morecambe and start the ride there. The ride proper, I should say. It's quite cold up here, but it was very easy to get bike space on the train, which is one very small silver lining to all of this. So yeah, hopefully we'll get some fish and chips in Morecambe. Here I am with my feet in Morecambe Bay, which actually isn't quite as cold as I was expecting. Dipped the bike's wheels in, picked up Gemma at Lancaster. It's actually really nice and sunny in Morecambe, and a really fast ride from Lancaster Station. So we're going to go and get some fish and chips as fuel, and then we're going to go set off in the direction that we're meant to be going for the next 170 miles, east to Settle. Just finished day one of the Wear the Roses, currently in Settle in North Yorkshire, and we did 64 kilometres today, just this afternoon. I think we were on the bikes for about three hours 15 minutes, and yeah, it was absolutely lovely. We got a bit lost coming out of Lancaster. The signage was a bit confusing, but once we were in the countryside, it was absolutely glorious. We were on the roads rather than cycle tracks, and just lovely swooping lanes, gently undulating, nothing too tasty today in the way of hills. Really lovely weather. Pretty quiet, and a few near misses with tractors, but to be expected. Nice villages, stopped for a pint in Clapham, which was very welcome. All in all, really good first day cycling, although apparently Settle, all the way out of Settle tomorrow morning, has a really fierce cobbled climb. So I think I possibly need to have a gin now to psych myself up for it.
At last, my wife and I have finally got our act together, and we are gearing up for our first ever bike pack trip. It's a Monday afternoon. We're leaving it a bit late. I just got off work, and there is a state campground about 20, 25 miles away. There are multiple ways to get there. We are taking the longer but less treacherous route. There's a potential route that goes through Peachum Bog, which, as any bog may be, could be very wet and maybe not crossable by bike. So we are taking the longer route, going up north through Cabot and then down through Groton State Forest to Ricker Pond, where we actually rented a lean-to tonight. I'm sitting outside looking at our bikes. We have two beautiful Specialized bikes. And despite having such nice bicycles, and we have some fantastic bags that I just got from Apadura, our bikes are looking more prepared than probably we are. My wife and I have done a lot of camping, I guess. So we have quite a bit of camping gear, although we have learned that bikepacking gear is oftentimes very different than camping gear. So we have one, between us, we have one sleeping pad, and we both have down sleeping bags, but they're a bit heavier duty and actually a little bit too big for our bike bag. So we have gone with one fleece sleeping bag liner, and I have a towel, like a quick dry towel that I will use as a blanket tonight. We both packed some spare socks, some long johns, a jacket, a thin rain jacket. And yeah, we are, I've been really excited for this, and my wife was less so until last evening, because today is a work day. We figured we should try to pack up as much as we could on Sunday evening. And once we started packing, my wife got very excited. I think just the fact that it all of a sudden became a challenge to fit all your stuff into these bags really made us decide what we actually wanted to bring and what we don't want to bring. Like I said, we have a lot of camping gear, but not all the stuff that maybe an experienced bike packer would have. We are bringing our own food for the night. Since it is a state park, there's no restaurants in the area, but there is a fire pit at the lean-to that we're renting. So for those of you in the UK, actually, who maybe do not know what a lean-to is, it is essentially a three-walled cabin. So it's like a structure that most often is used in the summertime when you're protected from the elements above, but you're not protected from, I guess, the cold. But it's a nice day here. It's maybe 80 degrees, I don't know, 28, 29 degrees Celsius. So it's beautiful. My wife and I have a little fanny pack I'm going to throw on, and we're going to put in some chicken sausages that we can cook over the fire. We brought some matches, and we brought probably something that we didn't need to bring, but we brought anyways, would be our s'mores. We brought about, my wife's laughing, we brought each a chocolate bar, half a bag of marshmallow, and whole pack of graham crackers. So it'll definitely be easier to pack coming out tomorrow. Make sure we eat all of our food so we have more space. We're about, I don't know, 20-30 minutes from departure. We got to get our clothes on, throw a few last things in our bags, and then we're off. Alrighty, so we made it 1.3 miles, 6 minutes from our house, and we are ducked under a maple tree. It started pouring down. Gretchen, what are you thinking? Looks like it will pass quick because it came in pretty quickly, huh?
Oh, I see some sunshine over there, so we're just going to wait it out.
Yeah, sunny and raining, but we don't have all that far to go, so I think we will just wait here for a few minutes and keep trucking from the bottom of our hill. Like I said, we made it 1.3 miles, only 17.7 to go. Or 18.7. The rain didn't last long. We jumped back on our bikes, had a very steep hill up through Peachum over Max Mountain. Got quite sweaty, actually. We're now in the middle of Groton State Forest. We're on an old railroad bed. We just crossed a very cool wooden bridge, so we stopped to eat some of the peas we picked earlier from our garden. Only about 5 miles to go. We're actually making pretty quick time. Haven't lost anything off of our bike bags yet. I did listen to Connor Dunn and Larry Warbass's no-go tour, where Connor lost his slippers off the back of his bike bag. Thankfully, we still have everything. This is pretty darn cool. We were talking about how I did a bike tour once through the Alps with my younger brother and our friend, former teammate Nathan Earle, but we stayed at hotels, so this is definitely something different. And when you have to bring sleeping equipment, you definitely add some weight to your bike. Gretch, you enjoying it?
Yeah, it's been really fun so far. We haven't gone too far from home, but we've already come across some roads that they haven't ridden, which is really fun. So we're almost there, and it's been blue skies ever since we got dumped on for a second there.
The one thing I already know I forgot that I'm regretting is my fishing pole. So I'm looking at my bike here and wondering how I could strap a fishing pole onto my bike for my next trip. But keeping some notes, and next time we do a bike pack trip, I will have a fishing pole. We'll catch up from the campsite. Gretchen's asking me if I want another sausage, so we made it to the campground. And oh, here's another bike packer. Interesting. Just saw a kid roll by on a bike fully loaded. Yeah, we made it. Jumped in the lake for a little swim. We did get a little sweaty after our climb up Max Mountain. So we jumped in, started a little fire. We had some chicken sausages that are one still on the grill, but we realized that we didn't bring any utensils, so we're just eating them off of some sticks we found and some diner ketchup packets that we had from who knows where. But yeah, we're making do with what we got, and it's actually been pretty nice to only have a limited amount of items, because you really have to think about what you're going to bring, what you're going to use, and how you can improvise on what you actually have with you. Gretchen, what do you think about this whole bike packing thing and that sausage?
I'm mid-bite. Excuse me. I think it's really fun. It just pairs things down in a different way, and we've already done our own camping, and it's all fun and good to bring things in a car, but it's just a little bit more exciting to know that you carried everything on your bike. Yeah, it's been really fun so far.
Yeah, we got some wood from the camp host, because normally we would bring some wood from our house, but good luck carrying a bundle of wood on a bike.
Also, don't transport wood. That's very important.
Oh, yeah, Gretchen said don't transport wood. Up here in New England, there's the emerald ash beetle that is killing emerald ash borer that is killing the ash tree, so you're not supposed to transport wood across state lines. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we did what we could and bought some wood from the camp host. And yeah, it's pretty mellow when you're out camping without cell service and without any sort of distractions. It's strange to think that it's a Monday night and we have to go back to work in the morning, but it's nice to realize that this is all so close and that we could do this really anytime we wanted to when the weather's nice. Maybe even come here. What do you think about coming here in the winter with the fat bikes, Gretchen?
I bet we could do that. Yeah, that would be another sort of layer to the whole adventure for me.
Yeah, it'd be awfully cold. I'm still in my wet swimsuit. But yeah, we're going to finish up some dinner. Dinner with sausages and some peas and a little trail mix that Gretchen brought. And then, like I said earlier, we have a lot of s'mores, and we'll probably catch you all in the morning.
Ollie, how do you feel right now?
Like a world beater. I could do it again. I think we should head off now, make it back before the train.
So Ollie ended up taking a lot of the weight today, but we did make a deal. I said, okay, you take the weight because my backpacks don't fit on my frame, unfortunately, and I'll take the wind until we got 40k out. And Ollie was like, no, now you can take the backpack, Hannah. And we just finished on a climb with about 12% gradients on it. What is a croco? Oh my goodness. Oh. But Spencer very kindly came out and met us.
Came more than I would.
Didn't you, Spencer?
It was great. I think we would have lost without you.
We would have.
It was a bit dark.
It was very dark. What time is it now? 20 to 9. So we set off from Montpellier at midday.
8.5 hours. Not bad.
8.5 hours.
I reckon 20 minutes, half hour for that stop.
Yeah.
And then probably another half hour, 40 minutes lost on just stopping and turning around. So.
Because my incompetence.
It was a team effort.
Incompetence with being able to put two different routes into a Garmin. Oh, but this is pretty cool though. A nice bike room. Look at this. Really cool.
Walk us through it, Spencer.
So it's like a full kitchen in here.
Oh,
so
nice.
It's like things like people can put their bidons in the fridge. And so what we wanted was that, like, because so many people come here cycling, that if you don't give people an area to put their bikes, then just put them in their rooms and stuff like that. And this just used to be like a disused garage. So yeah, we just thought, you know, let's just make something of it. So
can you just tell us where we are, Spencer?
So if it wasn't dark and you looked over there, we're, as the crow flies, about a kilometre from Vontu. Mm. And then, so Malassen's 3 kilometres away. And then Bedouin in the opposite direction is about 8.
Nice.
So yeah, it all like opens up. So as you climb up Vontu from Malassen, you can like look right down into the garden.
Yeah. But that's not the way we're going to do it.
No, it's not the way we're going to do it tomorrow. No.
Oh, we're going to take the hard option. I actually was really excited. I think I actually let out a little scream of joy. But yeah, when we left Nîmes and all of a sudden we turned a corner and just the road opened up and we saw Vontu, it was pretty impressive, wasn't it? You can see it from miles away. It's cool.
But yeah, it's good, isn't it? It really like kind of sticks out on the horizon, doesn't it? So it's good if you're having a big ride to have something to aim for.
Yeah, yeah. We were definitely aiming for it. Right, I think it's shower time and dinner, isn't it?
Okay, it's the morning of my ride. 166 kilometres, I think I've mapped out just to be safe. We live in Oise, but we're on the border of the Somme, and so I thought it'd be a good idea to try and find a memorial in the Somme, relevant in some way to my family, in particular my grandfather, my mum's dad, Drummond, who was a Royal Scot. And there is such a memorial at Contalmaison, and it will come about 2/3 into my ride. Going to have a bit of a... Well, the plan is to have a reception there. My wife and little boy are going to appear there with some supplies for me, I hope. But my bike's clean. It's quite early. It's almost 9 o'clock, so I'm going to head off at 9. And it's pretty grey. It's not cold, it's warm, but it's... It's not the searing heat that we've had the last couple of weeks, which is nice and refreshing. And quite sort of nervously excited. I'm going on roads I don't know at all today. Pretty much a new course for me. Heading south. We're about in between Lille and Paris, equidistant. So I'm heading sort of south initially and doing a big loop around. The big city nearby is Amiens. Well, it's a big town really. I'm avoiding Amiens and I'm sort of keeping south of that and coming back by Albert and Contalmaison, which is a particularly significant memorial. It's a Royal Scots memorial, but they were known as the Sporting Battalion, McCrae's Battalion they were, and they were known as the Sporting Battalion because quite a lot of footballers there, Heart of Midlothian in particular, Hearts Football Club, the local football club to me in Edinburgh. Quite a few of their players were in that battalion and were killed in action, so they are remembered at the cemetery. So yeah, that will be quite a meaningful stop on my ride, I think. Weirdly, my grandfather, as I said, he was a Royal Scot. He served in the Second World War in the Far East in Hong Kong, and today is VJ Day, Victory Over Japan Day. I didn't realise that until I heard it on the radio this morning, but there you go, there's another connection. So that was the day my grandfather was released after 4 years in prisoner of war camp. So another sort of significant date in my family's history. And there's a cyclist going past. A lot of cyclists here, wow. Somebody suggested that I sit on one of the local pros, but they're all the way racing at the moment. Arnaud Demar is from not far. So straight out the door after my breakfast of a lot of porridge, 2 eggs, toast, coffee, and there are 7 scheduled climbs on my route today, and the first 2 of them came in the first 3 kilometres. Whew, so that wasn't pleasant. I was also full of water, probably weighing an extra few kilos because after my error last week of not taking a face mask and not being able to get any spare water. I overhydrated this morning. The fact there are only 7 climbs, none of them very difficult at all, tells you all you need to know about the landscape around here. I'll do 1200 meters of climbing today, but really no significant climbs at all as I go through a tunnel. It's just so rolling. You feel most of the time like you're on top of a plateau. You can see for miles and miles, or kilometers and kilometers. And it's, well, anybody who's been on the Eurostar to Paris will be kind of passingly familiar with the countryside around here. Also, if you remember the 2017 Tour de France, the stage on Bastille Day, which was won by Dylan Groenewegen in Amiens. Incredibly boring stage, but extremely pretty. Well, that stage went through my village with about 26 kilometres to go, I think. So it makes the little climb out of the village quite hard to rank on the Strava King of the Mountains leaderboard there. There are lots of riders from the tour that day ahead of me, including Ian Boswell, our own Ian Boswell. But I've got my sights set on that. Maybe, since Arnaud Démare is a neighbour, maybe take a leaf out of his book and hold on to a car going up it. No, I'm only joking. Come on, Arnaud. It's just a little joke. Anyway, on we go. It's very moody and cloudy. Sorry, very low cloud. But you do feel very high up. I'm not high up, it's 70 metres above sea level. But like I say, you have this feeling of being on top of the world. Just because of that visibility. There's no sense like you get sometimes riding in England where there are high hedges and twisty roads of being quite hemmed in. Here, it's just open, open, open. Lots of wind farms, electricity pylons, not so nice, but yeah, just fields, and it's incredibly rural, but incredibly productive land because it's harvest time at the moment, and the number of tractors and combine harvesters in the fields and going past the house is quite extraordinary. Anyway, onwards.
Hi, it's Felicity. I'm in a pub in Pateley Bridge. Just had a delicious lunch, a very light lunch actually, of broccoli soup. I actually think it was homemade, and a not so light portion of chips. So that was lovely, and a bit of shandy. I think that we probably deserve to go and find a cake now, because this morning was it was quite hard work. We knew that the beginning bit was going to be hard because the guide described the climb out of Settle as crazily steep. And it was about, it was cobbled at the bottom, and then it was up to 20% in places. And I can't lie, I did manage to unclip at one point and really struggled to clip back in. So I didn't ride all of it, I've got to be honest. But it was still hard work, and there were a few other climbs as well, but I did ride all of those. But yeah, it was a really nice morning cycling, apart from the relentless up and down and a very steep downhill into Pateley Bridge, with lots of warning signs about how dangerous it was. That was nice. But yeah, it was a good morning. We stopped at a really nice cafe in Burnsall, which apparently the Brownlee brothers also favour, and met some fellow Where the Roses cyclists. One guy that was doing it in 2 days and had just set off from Morecambe this morning, which made us feel a bit small, and to people that were taking it a bit easier, which made me feel better. And we still haven't seen them come through Pateley Bridge, so clearly we're very fast. So apparently there's one big climb coming out of Pateley Bridge, and then hopefully it's a bit more even going to Ripon, but I don't know. I feel like the dales are kind of up and down, so we shall see. Hi, it's Felicity reporting in from Ripon. This afternoon we cycled from Pateley Bridge, which was about 12 miles, but felt considerably more. The guide claimed that there was only one significant hill, which was one at Pateley Bridge, so dispatched that. It was on quite a busy road. I was feeling quite pleased with ourselves. And then that hill just went on and on and on, and it kept flattening out. And I was like, this is done. But no, I think we were probably riding that hill in various permutations for about an hour. And it was sort of rarely, I don't know, I think it was maximum gradient about 19%, but most of it wasn't incredibly steep, just went on. And yeah, so that was fun, but more than made up for actually by the National Trust let you cycle through the grounds of Fountains Abbey and Studley Royal, and you go through the Deer Park, and it's this amazing long straight ride and no traffic. Absolutely wonderful. Thank you, National Trust. So that put my spirits back up as we came into Ripon. So all in all, it was a day, I think, of some really stunning landscapes and some definite type B fun, which is seeming, you know, better already in retrospect. But now I think probably off for a pint.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Science in Sport are our longest serving supporters. They've been fueling us through Grand Tour after Grand Tour since 2016. And well, they also fueled Richard Moore's ride in northern France, because as you'll hear in this next section, he relied on a caffeine gel to get him over the line towards the end of his long day out on the bike. If you want to get 25% off all Science in Sport products, go to scienceinsport.com and enter the code SISCP25. So you can stock up on energy bars and gels and powders to mix up into drinks to fuel your ride and aid your recovery. Go to scienceinsport.com and enter the code SISCP25, although I'm sure everybody knows the code by now.
Okay, so we are in Bédouin at the moment. We're just stopping and having a nice pre-climb coffee.
At the foot of Mont Ventoux.
Yeah, so how are you feeling right now, Ollie? Because I feel nervous, but also like excited, but also a little bit nervous.
I'm feeling good. There's, you know, a growing level of excitement, which is overpowering the initial fear, thanks to our small tour of the various outlying towns of Provence, the Crillon, the Brave Hotel.
We've done a nice kind of a good kind of probably 18% punchy little 200 meter climb up to a beautiful little church. Our guide Spencer, where the accommodation we were staying at, he kind of gave us a little bit of a quick tour around.
Yeah, Garden of Champions we went to visit as well. I think the garden part should be emphasised more than the champions. It's very rural, you know, unkept, rugged, with
a bit. What I thought would really set off the Garden of Champions was the fact that the naming on the board of the champions, so it was down to kind of who had won a stage at the top of Mont Ventoux, who had won a stage on there on the Dauphiné. There was also just the general who's climbed Mont Ventoux and has a great personality, and what was on there, which was brilliant, was Juan Manuel Garate, who's actually the DS in EF. His name, he's fortunate enough, his name is the last name to be properly lettered onto the board. Chris Froome and the rest of... So
possibly wrote it himself with a Sharpie. This is before the garden fell into disarray.
Just written on with a Sharpie. It's amazing.
If the board's to be believed, they no longer plant trees for these champions, but there's not really much space left in said garden, so...
No. Maybe it was just a few weeds. They've let the weeds come through and they've just, like, cultivated them. They've been like, they'll do. We'll just leave the weeds in.
A few varieties of grape as well.
Yeah, exactly. And what's quite amazing, actually, at the moment is because we're in October, the grape harvest has just happened not so long ago. And
We've got a nice day. The sun's starting to try and break through the cloud. Good temperature. No wind.
At the base. we'll hold our tongues just now.
Yeah, that's true, actually. No wind so far. And so we can kind of... We can see the white slopes from where we're having a coffee, just...
The power station in the distance, which is our goal to attain.
Yeah.
When we know we've reached the top of Mont Ventoux.
Did you remember your Sharpie, though, for when we get back down to go and write on the Guardian of Champions?
I was thinking to spike my finger on my my front cassette and write it in blood. As a way to give a bit of life to the garden.
Kind of appropriate.
Yeah. If there's any blood or fluid left in my body after we've done this climb.
Right, on that note, we'll see how it goes. Right, so I am about just nearly 6k off the summit now, and I can tell you when you round this right hand bend, then all of a sudden up ahead you see the tree cover start to kind of become sparse, and that limescale landscape all of a sudden comes into view. Oh, that is a happy, happy sight for sure. But it is beautiful. We've been so lucky with the weather, I think. My bike's also developed a creak, which has been a nice companion all the way up. But the trees are golden brown. There's quite a lot of cyclists. Bonjour. Around, and don't know where Ollie is, he's back there somewhere. So here we are, Shallow in our nice. But I have to say, well, now the gradient's leveled out and it's a joy to ride. But, ooh, it's punchy. That gradient is definitely punchy. This is something I can't even imagine what it must be like to race up this bloody thing. But incredible. Just past the 1 kilometre to go, and oh wow, oh, that weather station is flipping beautiful. Allez, bonjour. Oh my goodness, never been so happy to see a big white tower with red and white on the top. But once you get out of the trees and up into the top, the view is insane. So incredible. Just see for miles and miles around. Okay, I'm gonna try and concentrate now. Need to concentrate on breathing and pedaling rather than talking.
Grumpiness, Chris.
I know.
Confused.
But made it though, Ollie.
Yeah.
How are you feeling right now?
Feeling good. Feeling good. Legs will be singing on the way down.
How pretty amazing was it to see just a really bog standard kind of white tower with a little red and white
satellite thing.
It's kind of, you know, dichotic of the euphoria from reaching the top and the very, you know, banal power station that almost looks like the top of a cruise liner.
Yeah. Cruise liner of the world.
Yeah. Oh.
I've made it to Contalmaison, 102 kilometres on the clock. It's been very enjoyable so far. I suspect I've had a gentle tailwind, and which means, of course, a gentle headwind home. But anyway, I've made it here to my main stopping off point, and the welcome party is not quite here to welcome me, but never mind, I'm sure they're on their way. In front of me is a church. It's quite a small church, not like some of the massive old buildings in tiny little villages that you see around here. Huge churches for villages with populations of, I don't know, in the low hundreds. It's a small, modest, quite modern looking church, and there's a cairn in front of it, which, or to the side rather, which the plaque says is made from Murrayshire stone and constructed by Scottish craftsmen in 2004 when it was officially unveiled. The Scottish flag and the French flag are fluttering on flagpoles in front of me beside the church, and there are various plaques and notice boards, information boards with some of the history and the stories of what happened here in Contalmaison. And its links with McRae's battalion, the sporting battalion as they were known. Sound effects by me, both bagpipe music and Maxime being told off. The Contalmaison Cairn was unveiled in 2004, completing a project first suggested by survivors of McRae's battalion at the close of the Great War. It was constructed entirely from materials sourced in Scotland and built on site by Scottish craftsmen. McRae's battalion was the 16th Royal Scots, raised in Edinburgh in 1914 and named after its founder, Lieutenant Colonel Sir George McRae. McRae's first volunteers were 13 players from Heart of Midlothian Football Club, Hearts, leaders of the Scottish League. A vitriolic press campaign against professional football characterised players as cowards, preferring to stay at home while better men risked their lives at the front. The Hearts enlistment put an end to calls for the sport to be suspended by the British government. Players were joined by other footballers from Raith Rovers and Falkirk, and the battalion was completed by several hundred Hearts supporters, along with many followers of their great Edinburgh rivals, Hibernian. McRae's battalion arrived on the Somme in May 1916 as part of the British 34th Division, ready to participate in the great push of 1st of July. Their ultimate objective that day was the tiny village of Contalmaison. Before the war, Contalmaison consisted of about 70 houses, scattered round an open square and a substantial brick-built church. Most of the 500 inhabitants made their living from the land, growing wheat and sugar beet or grazing small herds of cattle on the verdant chalk downlands that rolled into the distance as far as the eye could see. By 1916, the cattle were dead, the people scattered, and the houses flattened by a pitiless succession of British artillery bombardments. Concealed within the ruins were the headquarters of the 56th German Reserve Infantry Brigade. The village was protected by two formidable entrenchments, Kaisergraben and Quadrangle, each of which was screened by several bands of barbed wire 8 feet high and 30 yards broad. In order to reach this position, however, the attacker had first to negotiate the enemy front system protecting Sausage Valley, which consisted of three additional lines of trenches, each with its own dense entanglements. Every approach was covered by machine guns. It was a veritable fortress. At 7:30 on the morning of the 1st of July, McRae's battalion rose up from their shallow assembly cuts near Beckort Wood and advanced in line abreast towards the wire. Almost at once, the guns opened fire. The lads, wrote one survivor, felt like corn before the scythe. They pressed forward, however, fighting their way into the enemy trenches with bomb and bayonet. Around 10:30 a.m., a small party breached Quadrangle on the Fricourt Road and advanced towards the village. The German response was improvised but stubborn. They pushed the attackers back into the cratered shell fields around Scott's Redoubt. Contalmaison would remain in German hands for a further 2 weeks. In their courageous efforts to liberate the village, McRae's battalion and the other units of 34th Division had almost ceased to exist.
Hi, it's Felicity again. I'm in York, actually just outside York Minster. It is very wet. It's been very wet all day. I think there was a greater than 95% chance of heavy rain from 9 o'clock onwards today, and it's fulfilled that. Fortunately, the scenery today has been much, much flatter than yesterday in the Dales. So it's not been too bad, actually. And we had a nice lunch in York, which was lovely. And now we actually don't have that far to go to Pocklington. It's so muddy that literally had to sponge off our legs before trying to gain entry into a cafe. So that was nice.
Hi, it's Felicity coming to you from Pocklington, on the edge, I believe, of the Yorkshire Wolds. It is still raining. If anything, the rain has intensified this evening, which was unfortunate. So we had quite a nice afternoon's riding from York to Pocklington. Still very wet, but really nice lanes, quite flat, but very little traffic. Nice windy routes, which was fun. There was a bit on a bridle path, which was would have been better, I think, on gravel bikes. It was already quite soft after a day's rain. That was a bit hairy. But we saw some llamas, and yeah, it was good. And then the B&B that I booked into, which inevitably is outside Pocklington, necessitating a very wet ride in for dinner and back, it's not, there's no offer to dry any kit, which is a shame. So basically our room is now like a kit laundry, but everything's dirty and just steaming on radiators. Generally a good day. Managed to get some pasta and wine in Pocklington, despite the somewhat apocalyptic weather, and get back safely. And I'm very pleased that we bought lights because we've had them on all day and they're extremely useful tonight because the roads are pretty dark here. Definitely not in London anymore.
Good morning, everyone. It is 6 in the morning. Gretchen and I made it through the night. There's some pretty good thunder and lightning this morning. The last few hours has been a little bit stormy. The storm is still passing over, but we slept, I would say, okay. Gretchen might say differently. It was took some maneuvering to both try and fit on one sleeping pad and with one blanket. There was a point last night where I realized that what I wanted to use as my pillow was also my blanket, and the other thing I wanted to use as my pillow was my shirt. So I was limited in options for being comfortable overnight. So, Gretch, how's your sleep?
Oh boy, I've had better night's sleep, but you know what? Could have been worse because we could be in the rain and we're in a lean-to. So I'm okay with that.
Yeah, it's been pouring for the last couple hours, so Gretchen's dumping some powdered espresso mixed with powdered milk into a little, a silicone cup for some cold coffee. We'll see if it just dissolves in cold water. And then we have our overnight oats with my spoon that's actually still out over the fireplace, so I might need to go grab that and we'll have... Yeah, that looks pretty strong. We need some more water. Good thing it's only about 16 miles back home. We have an option of taking more pavement rather than more dirt roads, but considering the roads are wet, it's probably actually a little bit better to ride the dirt. It's dirtier, but at the same time you get less rooster tail and less wet, just because the dirt roads absorb all the rain. So we're gonna have breakfast and we'll catch up from the road. As the thunder and lightning rolls on this morning, we have made the decision that we're going to ride home. We don't really have another option, and I got to get back to work, and Gretchen has some work as well. We didn't use our blinky lights yesterday, so we got plenty of flashing lights. Our bikes are carbon. I guess that's a good thing. But it's only 16 miles, and I feel like if we really need to jump off the road and hide under a tree for all we can, I mean, we're going to get wet. The irony being, yesterday we stopped under a tree for, 5 minutes to avoid the rain? And we're going to get rained on the entire way home, which isn't the worst. It's nicer that we're going home because we can, throw all of our stuff out in the garage and let it dry off and maybe jump and take a nice warm shower before starting work. But, Gretch, any advice on checking the weather before a bike pack trip, maybe?
Oh, I'm certainly not the weather expert here, but I guess the advice is to check the weather before you go on a bike trip. But I guess it's nice. We're not very far from home, so I'm not that worried.
No, we're not worried about the rain. It's more the thunder and lightning. But it seems like it's far enough away now. I actually just woke up for some reason, I got service at some point last night, and a neighbor who knew we were going on this trip said, "Wow, I heard the loudest lightning I've ever heard last night. Are you guys okay?" Loudest thunder, yeah. As you can hear it in the background now. So yeah, that's the weather forecast for the day, but nothing we haven't ridden through or been through before in my time as a pro cyclist. So we'll get home, and hopefully this is not my last ever dispatch. We don't get struck by lightning on the ride home. As you can hear, it's still dumping down, but I am happy to report that Gretchen and I are home safely in time for our work day. It's just after 8 a.m. Jump inside, rinse off. Our bikes are pretty dirty, but that is not a big issue at all. We're just going to unload our stuff and then give the bikes and the bags a rinse off later. But that was an awesome, 17 hours we were out there, Gretchen? Yeah. It was short. As I said before, it wasn't anything incredibly epic, but I would highly encourage anyone who has the ability to do a short overnight backpack trip, even midweek, to do it. If you live in a less rural area, go stay in a hotel or a bed and breakfast if they're open or when they open, because it's fun. It's a great way to get out there and ride your bike. Great way to see new things. On our ride home, I was considering how much space we had and how much stuff we packed based off of how much time we used it, and that would probably be the biggest piece of advice and lesson that I learned on this trip. We packed far too much, I don't say packed too much food, but if I were to do a longer bike pack trip, I would not pack our own food. I'd pack some snacks and bars and SIS gels and whatnot, but I think the way to do it would be stop somewhere before you get to your camp or your lodging for the night and get a meal. That way you don't have to carry all this food with you. We didn't have that much stuff, but the sausages and especially the s'more stuff really took up a lot of space. Considering we spent a total of probably 30 minutes eating, I would have spent more space I would have allocated more space in our bags to sleeping stuff, considering we spent tried to get 8 hours of sleep, but that wasn't entirely a restful night. But I'll put more sleeping stuff and pack less dinner food and stop and get something along the way. Gretchen's untying her shoes. Gretchen, first bike pack trip. Now that we're home, what are you thinking? You're a lot more excited than I thought you were going to be.
Oh, yeah, I love good adventure. It was really, it was quick and not overly complicated, I suppose, as far as backpack or bikepack trips go. But, it was nice to have a little adventure. And even getting wet, it's still, I still have a smile on my face. So I am excited for a hot shower, but.
Yeah, and it kind of reminded me of my old days of racing bikes when a rainy day in a race like Paris-Nice or any race really is miserable, but riding back home today knowing that we just had to get home was actually quite enjoyable. It was a warmer rain. Gretchen got a little bit cold on one of the descents, but yeah, that was an awesome experience, and I think it just whet our appetite for more bike pack trips to come. So stay tuned. Actually, one thing I would also not pack again would be this Zoom recorder. It's pretty cumbersome, and in the wet, I was worried about the water potentially getting it damaged, but thankfully I had a little bag, and the Apodura bags are waterproof or water resistant, so it survived one trip, but next time I think I will leave my Zoom recorder at home. Thank you all for listening, and I'll catch you on a Explore episode with the Cycling Podcast at some point soon. Bye.
Hi, it's Felicity again. We're on the last stretch now. We just stopped at Driffield for a very nice bakewell tart and a coffee. And now we're doing the final 19 miles to Bridlington. It is now very flat. It almost looks like fens. We did have some really gorgeous riding this morning through the wolds, sort of gently undulating. Really lovely. The downside of it being very flat and us heading to the coast is that it's incredibly windy and just sheltering by a level crossing. But yeah, apart from that, it's great. Hi, it's Felicity coming to you from Bridlington, our final destination on this Way of the Roses expedition. You may be able to hear the authentic seaside amusements that I'm standing outside. We arrived about 1:15 this afternoon, just in time for some fish and chips. And it was such a lovely final bit of the ride. We saw the North Sea grey in the distance, and then we swooped down straight onto the promenade at Bridlington. And we were so lucky with the weather. And the sun was coming over the sea, and the tide was out. So the beach was stretching before us, golden sand, etc. I think Yorkshire really did itself proud today, if not yesterday with all the rain. But it's been such a great trip. I am glad that we did it in 3 days in the end rather than two. Gemma and I were discussing this earlier. I think you could have done it in two, but it just would have been a bit of a slog, particularly that day through the Dales, which was so up and down. I don't think I would have wanted to do any more riding on that day than we did, especially with all the luggage that we had. So 3 days was just perfect. Great food along the way, met some really nice people. I'd definitely do it again. Brilliant, brilliant ride.
It's funny, last week 100 kilometres almost broke me. I was in bits at the end of that. This week, well, I'm 150 kilometres now and I am broken, I confess. But first 100 kilometres were a bit of a breeze, and as I feared, I did have a little bit of a breeze behind me. Those big open roads I was extolling the virtues of earlier, well, with a tiny, and I mean a tiny bit of a headwind coming back, they have not been my friend. It's been tough, grippy, but I expect it to be tough. And I'm at 151.7 kilometres exactly, so I'm reasonably close to home. And feeling good, mainly thanks to a caffeine gel that I had about 10 minutes ago. Thank you, Science and Sport. It's been a big day out. It's a long time to sit on your bike. It's a long time since I've done that. And the things that are really hurting are my back. lower back, feet, bum. Legs are okay. I'm not cramping as I thought I would be. Not yet, at least. But, yeah, it's a long time to be sitting in the saddle. I'm at 6 hours now, so it'll be 6.5, I guess, by the time I get home, 6:45. Whoa. And it was very kind of moving to stop in Contalmaison and see the cairn there and the Scottish flag flying alongside the French flag. That was nice. A little piece of home and a pretty moving memorial to some very brave men. A way of remembering my granddad as well. And I mentioned it was VJ Day today. Although obviously that meant that the war was over for him, and he and my gran, who was in internment camp for 4 years as well, they got married just before being taken prisoner. Well, they met because she was his nurse, because he was shot and he was taken to hospital. But that's another story, and a good one. But my grandfather wasn't one to, certainly not to glorify the war. He was, when it came to remembering his experiences in the Second World War, he was very into peace and reconciliation, and a bigger thing, I think, for him than VJ Day was remembering every year Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And I remember my grandmother being very active in medical campaign against nuclear weapons and organisations like that. But I've obviously been thinking about my mum as well, and she died 15 years ago. And it's funny that we've chosen to do a bike ride to remember her and raise money for pancreatic cancer, because she was not a cyclist. She suffered cycling. We suffered cycling. My dad, my brother and I, in a different way, we cycled. We loved it. My mum suffered it in a different way. But at the same time, she was very, very supportive. My middle brother, Robin, and I were obsessed. Well, I was obsessed by cycling. Robin was also keen on cycling and raced. My youngest brother, Peter, only got into it quite recently. I think that would have tickled my mum as well, because he was always very anti it in our house. He was the voice against cycling. There had to be one. So I think it's nice that we've been able to, all of us separately, remember my mum by taking on this challenge on our bikes. And yeah, I've been thinking about her a lot, especially as I get towards the end of this ride, and I'm pretty confident I will now get to the end of this ride.
Ollie, let's just describe the setting. Yeah. It's kind of like, it's like a massive barn, converted barn into like a really nice kitchen, isn't
it? It's like
it?
A modern kitchen put into an old French vineyard.
Yeah.
This apparently was where, Spencer was saying, where they used to keep the animals.
Oh, really?
Yeah, when this was like more of a farm as well as the vineyard.
We're sat in front of the fire after a long day.
Yeah.
Not as long as yesterday, though.
No.
But tough.
Tough in its own way.
Yeah. How are you feeling now you've managed to summit Mount Ventoux?
I'm happy, you know, I'm good. It was a big day, it was interesting. You know, I think I always thought we'd make it, it's just how quickly and in what state. But, you know, health, high spirits.
You looked in a good state.
Yeah,
when I got to you.
Singing to myself up there, having a jolly.
It was warm, though. So we started to climb, and it felt warm. And I got to the point where I was actually... It was, like, jersey open, like, sweating. Only into my right eyeball. I'm not really sure why. Not into my left, but that's fine. And then I got towards the top after Chalet Réunion, and I was like, ooh, starting to get a bit chilly now. You could feel the drop in the temperature the higher up you got. And so I did my jersey up. But we had... we looked out with the weather because we got to the top. There wasn't a scrap of wind up there, was there? Which, for Windy Mountain, Ventoux, was pretty lucky, wasn't it?
I think we got away with that one. It was, yeah, lovely from the top. Bit of cloud cover when we got there to keep the heat off. And then the descent was awesome as well with those nice wide corners.
Yeah, and we were actually, as I made a bit of an error, I didn't even see the Tommy Simpson Memorial when we was growing up. I think I was so concentrated on the amazing, like, white landscape, all of this limestone, the scree, and it kind of went down and met all of these golden, rusty colours of the trees that were obviously starting to turn with it being this time of year. And I was just blown away by the view. It was absolutely incredible. And then the descent, I mean, you spend 2 hours getting up there.
You start off in the clouds, and then within 20 minutes you're back at Bedouin. So, did it ever happen, you know?
Exactly.
3 hours of my life that I spent struggling up that thing has just flashed into a...
It's like it's erased away in a moment. Yeah. It's like, yeah.
And then you have a plate of veggie lasagna in front of you. And
and that's it. You couldn't wish for anything more. Hot chocolate, veggie lasagna. And then we're just about to sit down and have a nice chili with Karen and Spencer. So, yeah, it's been good. It's been amazing.
Successful day two.
How are you feeling about day three, 150, 160 kilometres ahead of us now?
I think we've got this. You know, we'll see. I'll see how I feel in the morning. My legs feel fresher today than they did yesterday, which I think is a good sign. Yeah. Adaption to taking place.
We've just got to make sure we get back for a 4 o'clock train, so that's there's going to be the pressure, isn't it, of that? But good pressure.
We leave early enough. So. leave at 10 a.m. We're not making that train.
If not, we just need to start and get on some recommendations for what's good to do in Montpellier on a Saturday evening in a pair of bib shorts. But anyway,
oh, it's a good place to eat.
Well, Hannah, the big question is, did you make it back into Montpellier in time for the train?
No. No, we didn't.
Oh, fantastic.
It was, we set off at about 7 a.m. in the morning, 7:30. The sun hadn't even come up by that point. And we were riding along. And obviously this time the Garmin was telling me to go the right way. It wasn't telling me to do a 180 every 500 meters. And so we were going along, and we were going down some of these beautiful little country lanes and through like the Provence countryside. It was absolutely stunning. And so we got to about, I think we'd got through Avignon, and I was the only one who had the Garmin on, and Ollie didn't have like a thing to fix the Garmin on to a mount for his bike. Anyway, I think the previous 2 days I was just feeling so tired. And the day before, this was the other thing, the day before I couldn't eat very much because I just felt so tired. And my body, I think, I don't know why, sometimes you just don't feel like you can take on enough calories. And Ollie kept saying to me, Hannah, you need to eat more, you need to eat more. And I was like, I can't. Anyway, there was one point when we were about 10K outside of Nîmes. I put my hands on the handlebars after the Garmin sent me the wrong way up a hill for us to turn around and come back down it. I was like, I just can't anymore. I had a little bit of a breakdown. Ollie was like, okay, maybe we just go and get the train from Nîmes to Montpellier, and then we'll have a bit more time in Montpellier to have lunch and it will all be okay. And then my brain was like, but then we failed. We haven't done the full 160 kilometres. He was like, we'll have done 95 kilometres. That's plenty. And I was like, okay, fair enough.
I think that is fair enough. Let the train take the strain. I mean, you know, yeah, it was quite a long old ride the day before Mont Ventoux, and then, of course, the summit of Mont Ventoux. And as you said, the rookie error there of having programmed into the Garmin the return route for the outward leg. So you're getting told to turn around it must have been constant.
Oh, it was constant.
Turn around where possible.
Yeah, it was kind of, it was really mind-breaking. It was definitely, it's incredible how that little piece of electronic goodness can be so great at some moments, but then can quickly change to you wanting to throw it into a hedge bottom. Not that obviously all garments are like that, but need to be careful.
Well,
but you know what I mean. It's like it's the rooting, not the garment.
Yeah, you can become a bit of a hostage to the technology, can't you? And you want to retain that sense of being in the great outdoors. That ride I was talking about, riding from the stage start to our hotel in Grenoble during one of the stages of the Tour de France. A similar situation. I was using Komoot, and it's a fantastic app, but it did keep sending me off what was already quite a nice ruralish road. It was perfectly acceptable to ride on. You know, there was traffic on it, but it was fairly light traffic. I was having a fine old time, but it kept diverting me off to go up the hillside, over the hill, and then back down, and then I joined the same road again at the bottom. And now, obviously, it was thinking it's sending me on a beautiful scenic alternative route and getting me off the main road. Fine, but after about the third of these little hills that I went up, I decided to ignore it and just stick to the nice main road that was taking me to Grenoble a bit quicker. And it trimmed sort of 20 odd k off my ride, which made perfect sense to me anyway. Especially as I'd not managed to have any lunch. So yeah, I think you've got to find that balance between good old-fashioned footloose and fancy-free riding and using the technology to get you from A to B as you wish.
Yeah, exactly. We finished off with having a couple of hours in Montpellier and had like a really nice long lunch, and it was perfect. Otherwise, I think Ollie said, if we had made it by 4 o'clock, I'm not sure. I think you'd have just blamed it all on me, and it's fine. I would have taken it. I said, no, I wouldn't, but maybe our friendship that's been blossoming through riding over the last few months may have taken a bit of a downward spiral, because once you start to get hungry and angry, any kind of friendship can take it. It can be a bit of a strain, can't it? But you live and learn. So that was the thing. We had a great time anyway. In the end, it was good.
I do think people see the real me when I'm hungry. That's the worry. So I try not to get too hungry too often. But wasn't that a lovely listen? I mean, obviously your adventure to Mont Ventoux just brought back my ride to the same mountain a few years ago, which features in a Friends of the Podcast special, which is on our Friends of the Podcast 2020 feed now. If you want to sign up, go to thecyclingpodcast.com/join and you can subscribe and listen to that today. I mean, I found Mont Ventoux, as I said in that episode, I'd ridden I'd ridden bits of it before, but to do the full Bedouin up to the top via Chalet Reynard route was something that I wanted to tick off. And well, the Tour de France will be tackling it twice, once from the Salt direction and then once from the Bedouin direction. So it will be a big one next year during the Tour de France, a double ascent of Mont Ventoux. Certainly one of those days to make sure you're in front of the telly.
And I think that's exactly what I think this episode is meant to be for, isn't it? It's meant to kind of try and get people into that mindset of thinking about where their adventures will take them. And I honestly, I imagine you're the same, I couldn't highly recommend Ventoux enough. I mean, we were so lucky when we got to the top of that mountain, there wasn't a scrap of breeze up there. It was insane how calm it was. But even I had a conversation with Alberto Bettiol, one of the riders for EF, a few weeks ago, and I said, oh, I rode Mont Ventoux the other day. And he said, oh, that bleep mountain. He said, I guess you have to do it once in your lifetime, but God, it's a horrible mountain to climb. But I guess like racing up, it's a different story. So
I think it probably is. Yeah, at least, well, they can't stop and take in the views, can they? That's one drawback for the pros that are racing. But yeah, I definitely think just hearing Richard, the motivation for Richard's ride and the very personal reason for doing that ride and then tying it in with the visit to the war memorial as well, and Ian's advice about just going on a little overnight bikepacking trip, that appeals to me as well. I think it's proof that you don't necessarily have to do 100 miles to make a cycling adventure fun and meaningful. Ian and his wife Gretchen, what was it? He said 20, 25 miles out, 20, 25 miles back. And yet they had a fantastic overnight trip. I think that's a lesson there for all of us, really.
Yeah, exactly. I really like the idea of that, actually, that they just went out and did an overnighter. And it's such a, again, it's so accessible. And how Gretchen had said that within such a short distance away from home, they'd ridden on roads that she'd never ridden on after having lived there for so long. So it's, exploring on your doorstep as well is something that's also very, it can be very enjoyable as well. So yeah, I think that sounds like they had a great time as well. Apart from the torrential rain, but I think that's all part and parcel of it, isn't it?
It is. It's an occupational hazard, isn't it? You know, there's some rides where you just can't avoid it, but yeah, all part of the experience. Well, we should wrap up this episode of Explore, Hannah. We'll be back for one final episode before the end of the year at some point in December. And well, hopefully after Christmas and in the new year, the world will open up a bit more and we'll be able to explore a little bit further and a little bit more freely as hopefully we all pass through this coronavirus crisis. But well, that's my wish for the end of the year anyway.
I can definitely get behind that wish, 100%.
Just before we go, I wanted to let you know that we have partnered with the cycle insurance company LACA to create a cycling podcast community within LACA's wider community of cyclists who are all cooperating to provide insurance cover for their bikes and equipment. Now, as you're listening to Explore, there's a pretty good chance you ride a bike yourself. And who knows, maybe you own more than one bike, I don't know. If you're like me, you'll want to know that they're covered in the event of anything going wrong. And LACA's insurance is created specifically for cyclists, and so they really know what it is they're insuring. They pride themselves on settling claims quickly and replacing any stolen or damaged parts quickly too. And because the cover is provided by the community, premiums are adjusted in relation to the claims that are made, with a cap also in place so you know the maximum amount you can be charged as a premium each month. All the details are on the LACA website at laka.co.uk. That's laka.co.uk. And if you sign up with the code TCP, you'll automatically join the cycling podcast community and you'll be supporting us in a small way too. Well, until next month, Hannah, thank you very much.
Thank you, Lionel.
If you'd like to sponsor Richard or donate to Pancreatic Cancer UK, you still can. There's a link in the episode notes. A big thank you to friends of the podcast, Karen and Spencer Martin, who invited Hannah and Ollie to stay at their place in the shadow of Mont Ventoux. To find out more about La Ferme des Belugues, there's also a link in our show notes. Finally, a big thanks, Hannah, and all our diarists, Richard, Ian and Felicity Cloak, whose book, One More Croissant for the Road, is available as a book, ebook or audiobook. This has been an episode of Explore by the Cycling Podcast. The producer was Will Jones.